Welcome back to the Projection Booth. This is the fourth and final episode of the series we're doing called Flooding with Love for First Blood, Son. A look at all things First Blood and Rambo. Let's roll it. It was great talking to Zachary Oberzan about the micro-budgeted film Flooding with Love for the Kid. I think that's the only film I've ever seen that actually puts the budget of the film as part of the film, which is great. I think more films should do that and really be held accountable. The film that you just watched cost this much money.
And in this case, it was a grand total, as he puts on the card, $95.51.
Yeah, perfect, which is great and makes it work like nobody's business. I mean, this film is so effective. I think you and I had the exact same reaction when we were watching this, which is very funny because we watched it, you know, years apart, actually, was if you can make it past those first few minutes and let your mind accept that this is one guy doing all these different roles, then you're going to enjoy this movie. I think if you can't accept that, just turn it off. But if you can get into it, watch it for 10, 15 minutes. Once you hit that spot, and I'm not sure where that spot is, but the story and the acting and everything just grips you, and we're off to the races.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I told people when I went to see it. I go, just see it. It'll take you about 10 minutes to get into the ideas and to live in the space that Oberzan creates. But he's such a good actor and he's bringing across such great ideas that even if they're presented very childlike in very no budget ways, you can deal with it. Because the thing is I think we're so used to realistic effects. I think we live in a place where we're so used to realistic effects that I would put Flooding with Love for the Kid as a real art film, because what he's trying to do is to get you to understand that these are symbolic. These things are not real. And he's even in a way sort of pointing to film itself as we were talking to him and going, well, that's fake. The only difference is that it kind of looks real to you because you've accepted that as what, you know, a real gunshot wound would look like. So the idea of using, you know, running water in the sink for the stream or the teddy bear for the animal that he's caught and killed, or even the toaster for the radio that he communicates with, it's so good and it works in so many ways. But the one thing that I think that really helps to set up the whole premise for Flooding with Love for the Kid is the first title card you see. You see these two boxing gloves and it says the following film is a one-man war. And I think that really echoes in a lot of ways the story, the idea of Rambo against many, but also in the case of Oberzan himself, where this is a film that one would say is him versus maybe the entertainment establishment or the people that would hire him as an actor or the world outside. But it's also, I think, I would say a one-man war of a man challenging himself in that he's trying to challenge himself in creating something and making something sort of outside of the idea of sort of good or bad. We're not even going to judge it. We're just going to do it. And then here's the end result. And I think the end result works smashingly, and it's one of those things that, like I said, it's not distributed by anyone. It kind of pops up here and there in certain places that are hip to it, as Zachary told us in the interview. But the best way to do it is just go over to his site and throw the guy a couple of bucks, get yourself a copy of the DVD, and he'll mail it to you. And it's definitely worth checking out, especially if you're a fan of First Blood, because it's really interesting to watch, because he, as he said, tried to stay very, very faithful to the book.
Right. Well, I should say, too, that those two boxing gloves that you point to, the way that they're set up on the screen remind me of a heart. The way that they're facing each other and the shape of them together reminds me of a heart shape. And it just really, you know, because he does make this with a lot of love. And he has a huge love of the Murrell book, which is great. I mean, that was something that he just, you know, that was his go-to book as a kid and as he grew up and everything. And just the amount of importance of that book in his life just can't be stressed enough. And for him to do this project, I mean, you know, to make a movie in your apartment where you are all of the roles and, you know, you do all the special effects and you do all this, everything, so much work, and just it all pays off. It just is really, I mean, once you like I was saying earlier, once you reach that point, there's just a moment where you get sucked in, man, and you just you still realize what's going on. And, you know, especially like when he ends up being Orville's dogs, you know, or he's all of the different police officers who are out in the forest looking for Rambo. But, you know, it doesn't take you out of the story. It just kind of really makes you appreciate the work that's going on. It's kind of weird because there are very few times where I can watch a movie and realize the hard work that has gone into the movie and kind of not be taken out of it at the same time. You know, there are moments where I watch a film and I see a cheesy effect or there's something unpleasant on screen, like, somebody getting their eyeball cut out or something like we talked about last week in Solo. But, you know, that's when my filmmaker voice clicks in and it's just like, okay, well, here's how they did that effect shot, you know, rather than be part of the narrative, I'm thinking of how it was actually made. This film, Flooding with Love for the Kid, I can be in both roles at the exact same time. I'm thinking about how he was making this and I'm enjoying the story at the exact same time, which is a very weird thing for me because normally it's one or the other, and then this time it's both together, and just it made the viewing experience even more rich that way.
When you talk about that, I think what it has to do, as we were talking about, is that setup in the first 10 minutes. Is every movie sort of plays within its own universe. It sets up its own rules. It sets up its own sort of culture, per se, as to these are sort of the things that you're going to deal with in this movie. This is how we're going to present them. So when you see sort of like a big budget film and it has a really bad effect in it, it has a tendency to pull you out because it's not playing in the rules of what the film has given you the premise to be. With this, it sets all that up so you don't have to worry about it. And then you can play in with all of that. But the one thing that it sort of reminds me of, and I think this is the reason why it's so incredible, is that you can take acting and put it in just like a black box theater. Like when I was taking acting classes and stuff like that in high school and then early college, was at times they would have shows in a black box theater. And basically black box theater is nothing more than a big black room with a couple of props, if that, on the stage. And it all relies on the interactions between the actors and for them to bring it out. And I've saw great productions done with like no props, you know, no costumes. It's because it all relies on the story and how those people can interact with each other. And in this case with Zachary Oberzan, it's even more interesting because he's not playing off anyone but himself. So he either has to look at a playback at some point or he has to remember what he was doing when he was playing Teasel. And then he has to remember what he was doing when he was Rambo and play back and forth that way. So that way he can kind of hit that mark just right. I mean, you think it's hard enough to match a film scene to scene all the way through as an actor, playing against other people and sort of have that arc. But imagine trying to do that where you're doing everything, where you're not only taking care of the lights, taking the sound, the camera, you're playing all the parts, you're making sure the effects look. I mean, you're trying to do everything. And that's the thing that's really amazing about it. I think the only other film that kind of comes close to this idea, and obviously it's a bigger budget film and it's got more people in it, was when Lars von Trier did Dogville, where you have this black box theater concept where, from my memory of it, there's a lot of like chalk lines and stuff and sort of key lights on people. And there was no real props to speak of in that, if my memory serves correct. So,
yeah, this is very much a Dogma type of film, but made without the under the auspices of the Dogma group.
Yeah, exactly. But Dogville was von Trier's Dogville was the one that I was thinking of that, like I said, has this sort of black box idea where, you know, they would have houses and it would be like, I think, like chalk lines on the floor, and then he would have these key lights where the lights would come on or off and to highlight certain things. So the idea of kind of stripping away a lot of the veneer of high polished film and doing something that's much more character based, much more interactive based. And I think that, like I said, Flying with Love for the Kid, can't help but recommend it wholeheartedly. It's worth your time. And it's great to see what he's doing next. He's been getting great reviews for Your Brother Remember, which played in New York, I think about a month or two ago. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that all comes together as well. Sort of taking this idea of what Zachary Oberzan was doing with Flooding with Love for the Kid, as someone who was obviously informed by First Blood and wanted to make sort of his own version of First Blood in some way, very faithful to the book, we come to another movie that sort of takes First Blood and the ideas of doing it yourself, that DIY film concept, and we come to Garth Jennings' Son of Rambo, which tells the story of two young boys growing up in England in the early 1980s. And as their friendship builds, they're struggling with their home lives, and they escape into arts, one through drawing and the other through filmmaking. And Will's a quiet boy. He was raised in a very strict home, the Plymouth Brethren, which we'll learn more about, and he's not allowed to watch TV, but becomes really obsessed with Stallone's Rambo character in First Blood when he sees it from his friend Lee, who's this really rambunctious but endearing boy who is into filmmaking and running around and making pirated copies of movies because he's snuck his old camcorder into the movie theater. And over the course of the film, Lee forces Will to become not only a stuntman, but also mutates into this brand new Rambo story, is what Son of Rambo is. His father in the story has been held captive by an evil scarecrow, and he must save his father, Rambo, obviously.
You don't tell me where they are hiding, then I have no choice but to shoot you and your cat. Do you have any last requests?
I was just... Skills.
You're going to be the stuntman in the film I'm making for Screen Test.
I am the son of Rambo!
You want to be the son of Rambo?
Promise me you'll put these things out of your mind, will you?
I'm not supposed to be friends with you.
What? What's wrong with me?
It's our religion.
If they find out we're friends, then I'll be in the worst trouble ever.
Well.
Good morning, Lee Carter.
Ready? 3, 2, 1, go!
You that little boy making a film?
Mm-hmm.
Can we be in it, please?
I will be star of your movie.
Is this all right, Will?
It's perfect.
It's my film.
You said it was my film. Rebel,
on your dress. He's driving the Jeep for the getaway scene.
Well, if I'm not needed, I'll be taking my camera back then.
Don't be stupid.
It's not you, it's them. I hate them. Look, I'm sorry, okay? It was better when it was just us two.
Son of Rambo, take one. Click.
Action! I've come to save you, Rambo! Hold on!
Ready?
Let's make the movie!
It's a charming little film that I don't know if a lot of people have actually saw, Mike.
I remember it getting some play when it was out. I mean, it is a small film, but yeah, it got some buzz, and I seem to remember it playing around, probably played at the Maine. I think you mentioned that earlier, but yeah, I finally caught up with it on DVD after it was released, and it was definitely, it's a small film, but it has a lot of impact, and the performances are incredible. I mean, these two kids that are the main kid actors, really great, and really all of the kids' performances. There's the French foreign exchange student that comes in, and I thought he was terrific as well.
We had a chance recently to speak to Garth Jennings, the director and co-writer of Son of Rambo, so let's roll the interview.
When I was about 11, I saw First Blood, and I saw it with some friends. And I think it was a pirate copy, I'm not quite sure. But it made an enormous impression on us. And it made me start making my own little Rambo movies as a kid. And then through the process of making little films and things, we also got so excited about the idea of being combat soldiers, that we joined the army cadets at the age of 13. And then I quickly realized that this was terrifying and the reality wasn't quite what I had in mind. So I dropped out and carried on with all things sort of arts and crafts. But yeah, and then it was, I don't know what the year was, but I was noodling around with ideas for films and suddenly realized that I was very fond of that period in my life when I first sort of really fell in love with movies and started making them myself and realized that those friendships that I had around that time were really... it was a unique period, both for films and for friends. So I was just trying to capture that. It's a very long answer. I'm sorry about that. But it's, yeah, it sort of started when I was a kid and then became something when I was older.
How much of the film was autobiographical? You said did you have a French foreign exchange student at your school?
Right. We had things like French foreign exchange students. I wasn't Plymouth Brethren, but my next door neighbors were for 25 years. So, everything in it is inspired by real stuff. Like my grandfather was in an old people's home where a lady who wore very outrageous wigs patrolled, the most charismatic woman ever. I was always dressing up my family members to be in my films. My dad was a getaway driver in a hostage situation and things like that. And it started as a bunch of notes based on my own childhood, and I quickly realized that it didn't make a very good film because I had a particularly lovely time, and that doesn't make a very dramatic film. But I found the minute I moved the story next door to the Plymouth Brethren house that it became a lot more interesting, and it also helped me kind of capture the idea of how the impact films had on you. It's hard to sort of, if you've seen every movie while you've been growing up and then you suddenly see First Blood, it's hard to communicate that in a movie, what an impact that had. So if you have a kid that's never seen any movies at all and that's the first thing he sees, then that goes some way to sort of capture that thunderbolt feeling that we had when we first saw that movie.
But those who don't understand the Plymouth Brethren, who are the Plymouth Brethren?
The Plymouth Brethren is a religious group. There's quite a lot of Plymouth Brethren through Europe. There's a lot in England. And they're simply a group that live by their own moral code. And they shun most, activities that would be like, that could be classified as a distraction from serving God. So TV, radio, media, fiction, that stuff's out. And they work and educate normally either within their own communities or they go to the same schools as everybody else, but they don't learn certain subjects or they sit out if there's a TV, if a teacher's showing the TV or something like that. So morally, they're very, they have a strict code and they live by that. And if you go outside of that code, if you want to leave that, then you're kind of excommunicated, is it, where you're sort of shut out, I think is the phrase it's known as. But very friendly, very nice people. No one was ever as severe as the in my community, my local community of Brethren, than the as the people in my. But of course, I read lots of accounts where there were big TV documentaries made about Brethren where it was as dramatic as it was in Son of Rambo. Very peaceful, very nice people.
So First Blood was a serious influence on you for this. And what was it about the Rambo character in that film that really captured your imagination and led to the creation of the film?
Oh, well, when I was 11, the idea of a character that could not only survive on his own with a stick and a knife, but that could take on 200 men and win in the forest, just with ingenuity, just being clever, being well-trained, that just seemed like the coolest thing ever, and the trouble is because the Rambo movies then subsequently became much more about body count and curious ways to dispatch your enemy. Whereas the first one, only one guy dies really. And that's because Rambo throws a rock at the helicopter and he falls out and the guy deserved it in my opinion. But you know what I mean? It was much more about that sort of survival and that guy on the outside. And I suppose when you were a kid, when we were kids, we sort of really found that terribly exciting. When he breaks out of the prison and drives away in just his vest. it was like, wow, this is not like James Bond, who's kind of got a car with wings waiting around the corner. This guy's making it up as he goes along. And that was very, very, very appealing. But ever since then, when I've gone back to it, I found it more, you know, equally enjoyable on different levels. We had no idea about Vietnam. We did not understand that this was a story about a man that was, you know, representing soldiers that were not welcome home. You know, that it was a war that people wanted to forget. We didn't get that at all.
So how difficult or easy was it to license the actual footage from First Blood for this?
I can't remember. It's a tricky business, but then again, it's more a kind of a long period of form filling and requests, and because you have to write to everybody. So, for instance, I had to write to Sylvester Stallone, which of course was quite a wonderful thing, having been inspired to make films in the first place by him. But and he was very nice and said yes. And when he saw the film, even he really liked it and was very supportive. But it wasn't too bad. I think it was just kind of long and a bit fiddly.
Before you were able to get this one going, you had done Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and that got some pretty well notice. I mean, the book's pretty well known. How hard was it for you to get Son of Rambo funded after you had made Hitchhikers?
Oh, it was really difficult, because we'd tried to get Son of Rambo made before Hitchhikers. We'd started casting and everything. But then Hitchhikers came along, and it was just too wonderful an opportunity to miss. Then afterwards, it was very, very tricky. Everyone in the UK turned it down. In the end, the film was financed by companies from France, Germany, and Japan, and Ben Goldhirsch's company, Good Magazine, in the States. And so it felt like a very tricky time. But then as soon as it came together financially, it was without doubt the easiest, most wonderful, not only shoot, but experience I think any of us had ever had. It just fell together. It really was a piece of cake.
The kids that play the leads, they are amazing. How are you able to find them, and what was their story?
Well, that's always the trickiest one, because if you get kids wrong, it's the most awful thing to watch, isn't it? It's really annoying or something. But it took us 5 months of casting to find them, and they came in right at the end, those two. Neither of them had been in anything before. Bill, who plays the lead character, Will, he'd only just joined his local, his school drama group the week before, because he wasn't doing enough sports and his parents thought he should do more team building activities. So we just happened to, our casting director just happened to turn up at this little school and say, you know, does anyone fit this description? He fitted the description. He came in, he read the lines, and we nearly jumped through the ceiling, because there he was. That was the boy. And the great thing with both of them is neither of them had any idea how good they were throughout the whole thing. And we made sure that we kept that. So there were no monitors on set. We never had any video playback. No one ever saw a frame of it, which, of course, the crew didn't like for a few days, but then they soon got used to it. But it was we were really lucky to find them. And then once we found them, we did everything we could to protect that charm and naivety that they had. And they just became great friends through the making of the film, which I think shows.
You talked about licensing the footage from First Blood, and when the film was completed, do you know if you got any reaction from Sylvester Stallone or anyone else connected to the film?
Yeah, Sylvester Stallone sent a very, very, very nice note, because we held a screening for him. I wasn't able to attend because it was in America, but he went along, and he was very nervous, I think, beforehand. Not very nervous. I think he was apprehensive that this was going to be a film that spoofed his character, which has obviously happened quite a lot in the past. And then he realized that it was actually the opposite, and that this was a very affectionate portrayal of the film and how much it meant to a group of kids back in the 80s. And he sent the most marvelous note, and even in interviews was very, very positive about our film, because people would sort of ask him, hey, have you seen this film about these kids making a movie about your movie? And he was really very kind about it, which was the nicest thing, and kind of weird as well after all these years for it to all come full circle.
So kind of in that vein, the way that people are asking Sylvester if he's seen your movie, I want to ask if you've seen a movie called Flooding with Love for the Kid.
No, I haven't seen that.
It's a really interesting take on First Blood, and it's actually what got us started on this. It's a guy shot the whole film, shot all of First Blood in his apartment.
That's amazing.
It's really good.
Wow. What, with friends or just on his own?
Just him, one guy doing all the parts.
Holy Christ. So all the
all
the Prison Break stuff and everything?
Everything, yep.
Wow. That's amazing. I've never heard of it.
Oh, it's really good. We'll have to send you a copy.
Oh, would you please? I would absolutely love to see that. How on earth has that escaped me? I'm sort of amazed. I mean, there were sort of other projects. I know that it's always that thing of that sort of collective consciousness. There were a bunch of kids that made movies at a similar time to me. So there were other films that were coming out or being talked about, you know, people, kids making their own version of Raiders of the Lost Ark and things like that. But that one, that sounds amazing.
That's actually what got us on this, as Mike said. Originally, I had seen Flooding with Love for the Kid here in Detroit at a midnight screening, and I was so impressed with the film that I was like, let's do an episode on that. And then as we sort of went down the rabbit hole, it was like, well, let's contact David Morrell, who wrote the book, and let's contact Ted Kotcheff, who directed First Blood, and let's contact you, because you directed Son of Rambo. So it became this massive thing that we're now doing for this episode. It's probably going to be over 3 hours long when we're done. But it was just, like I said, that film really made me go back and look at First Blood and Rambo all over again. And as a matter of fact, on your Skype, I sent you a link. I think you might be able to see it, to Zachary Oberzan's site, and you can see the trailer and whatnot. But he shot the whole thing in his apartment by himself. He plays every character. It's a, did it for like $100 and in a his small little New York apartment, and it was just brilliant. So, like I said, we wanted to talk to you, and we talked to him about sort of why Rambo is this thing. And it's kind of interesting that in a lot of ways your film kind of mirrors your film itself, in that when you were a kid, you were so influenced by this film.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to see his film, though. That just sounds like... what I'm always amazed at is if you try and make anything, seeing anything through is tough. Do you know what I mean? Like 5 minutes into any job you're doing or any kind of idea, it normally starts to run out of steam. And that this guy continued with that in his own apartment, where you could clearly go, oh, I'll just check some emails, you know, or I'll do that next week. He's like, no, he did the whole movie, right?
Yeah. And it took him almost a year. He played all the various roles. And like I said, it looks like he shot it in his apartment. But what you learn after about 10 minutes into watching it is all of that sort of falls away. And you're so sucked into the performance and the story that it doesn't matter that he made it for under $100.
That's just wonderful. I mean, it's that it is interesting because I'm guessing he really loved that movie. And because otherwise you wouldn't do it. I think if you were just taking the... You know, if you were just having a joke at another movie's expense, like you were trying to remake a bad movie, then that would kind of run out of steam. But it's good stuff, you know. It's in a way, even though I'm a big fan of Sylvester Stallone's, I think the films that came afterwards just really went the wrong way. In fact, of course, the film was never supposed to have a sequel. The ending was always that Sylvester's character never made it out. He did away with himself, but they even shot that, didn't they? I think that's on, you can see that on YouTube. Somebody said, hey, this is a franchise, people. Don't let it die. So we have Rambo 4 now, don't we? Yeah.
The thing that's also good is, wanted to let you know, we talked to David Morrell and also to Ted Kotcheff, and they have seen your film, and they both really appreciate it, especially David Morrell really liked it. So
that's amazing. You know what? It was worth having this call just for that line alone. Thank you very much.
The thing that really influenced Zachary, I don't even think was the movie. It was the book. He really loved the book a lot.
Yeah, you know what? I've read the book, but I haven't read it since 2005 when we were prepping the film. But I'm pretty sure it ended tragically. But I think the film's terribly well directed. It really stands up very, very well. And there's some funny old lines in there, like, you know, 200 men against your boys and Owen situation, all that sort of stuff. Good supply of body bags and all that sort of stuff. I mean, there's, and yet those guys hold it together. Brian Dennehy is awesome. He really, he manages to sort of legitimize even the most extreme moments. He's extremely good.
So we were curious what's coming up for Hammer and Tongs.
Hammer and Tongs. Well, at the moment, we're not confirmed on anything, but I've been writing these last few years. I've just been writing for about, I don't know how long now, about 9 months, or an animated film. That's what I want to do next, an animated film. But there are a couple of other things as well that are creeping around in the background. I don't know. It's been a very busy few years because since I made Son of Rambo, my wife and I have ended up producing all these children, and it's been busy. But I'm hoping to that some of these lovely things I've been allowed to write for the last couple of years will start to flourish and turn into real movies. I can't really say much about them yet because they're at that fragile stage, but fingers crossed, please. There'll certainly be wonderful things if I get to make them.
Are you planning at some point to indoctrinate your children with First Blood?
I don't know. I've you know the whole indoctrinating thing, like where you think they're going to love this band or they're going to love this movie. Invariably, that comes back to slap you in the face. You know, they'll start talking halfway through it, or they'll, you know, you're like, what, don't you understand? This is genius. So if I do show it to them, I'm going to try and sort of not up like I have done with a lot of the things in the past. Like, guys, you've got to listen to this record. It's the most amazing thing ever made. And they're like, yeah, whatever. But certainly they did like, I have shown my eldest son, Son of Rambo, and he really liked it. So maybe he should see it just so he understands what the hell it was all about.
Welcome back. That was Garth Jennings, the director of Son of Rambo. He makes some really good points about the story and the use of Rambo. So let's play some clips and talk about the evolution of the character here from the ideas of First Blood to really what Rambo became and what he's become in the years since then.
Who are you then?
Just a fly in the ointment, Hans. The monkey in the wrench. The pain in the ass.
Mr. Guest, you have me at a loss. You know my name, but who are you? Just another American who saw too many movies as a child. Another orphan of a bankrupt culture who thinks he's John Wayne, Rambo, Marshall Dillon.
I was always kind of partial to Roy Rogers, actually. I really like those sequin shirts.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
And you're out of your neighborhood, big city boy. I want your badge, I want your weapon, I want your ass. Who in the fuck do you think you are?
He thinks he's Rambo. Rambo is a pussy.
Mr. Rambo's neighborhood.
Hey, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. A beautiful day in the neighborhood. Hey, won't you be my neighbor?
Who is this guy?
I'm your worst nightmare.
Listen, I can see you guys are pretty busy. How about if I just come back later?
Forget it, pal.
As I mentioned earlier, there has been almost a cottage industry of foreign films taking the Rambo idea. I mean, basically, it's a bare chest, maybe with a bandolier and a red headband, and you've got yourself a Rambo character, somebody who's been wronged and needs to go out and get some revenge. And really, they're speaking a lot more to that sequel film, I think, than they are to First Blood when we're talking about this. I think that First Blood sets stuff up, but taking that character I mean, God, I can't really think of another character who just metamorphosized so much between the first and the second film. I mean, that second movie was such a change for what John Rambo was to become. But we should also mention, too, not only did you get foreign films, but you got a series of pornographic films when we're talking about Rambo. Not only do you have Rambone, but you also had Rambo, where it was like O-H-H-H-H-H, like as if you were saying it with pleasure. And that was Peter North as Rambo. So, of course, I'm sure there was a lot of pleasure to be had in that one. And that one starts very much the same way as the regular First Blood, where you have him walking down the street and crossing over this bridge and all this kind of stuff, but he's getting picked on by rednecks instead of Teasel. And poor Peter North, he's wearing this horrible bandana in that one. It's this camouflage bandana that looks like it's probably about like 5 feet long. So it just does not fit his head very well. And he's wearing this very oversized camo jacket and everything. And oh, man. But this, at least there's a story. And when it comes to Rambone, that one, it's one of these like, it's literally a one-line setup, and from there, it's just nonstop fucking for the rest of the film. Just who fucks who, and it takes like an hour before the Rambone character finally shows up, which is kind of a weird thing.
Oh, man. You know, and that's the thing is, when you have these co-adoptions of, obviously, pop culture, I mean, you can't really do a film, you can't really do anything or parody anything unless it's so well known to people. So just the idea that Rambo, from what he became in First Blood and then on into First Blood Part 2 and the sequels and everything, I mean, like I said, Johnny Carson used him, Weird Al used him in UHF, just been riffed in so many places. And then you have just the straight use of things, where you have toys, you have lunchboxes, you had a Rambo cartoon at one point.
Rambo! Anywhere and everywhere, the savage forces of General Warhawk threaten the peace-loving people of the world. There's only one man to call. Get me Rambo! Skyscrapers to the canyons of remote mountain peaks, Liberty's champion is unstoppable. Rambo, helped by the mechanical genius known as Turbo and the master of disguises named Cat, the honor-bound protector of the innocent. Rambo, the force of freedom.
And then at the same time, you have all of these different things going on in terms of the use of Rambo. You even have the President of the United States coming out and using Rambo as a metaphor for foreign policy.
I'm reminded of a recent, very popular movie. And in the spirit of Rambo, let me tell you, we're going to win this time.
I was fortunate enough to read the script for First Blood Part 2. Very different in a lot of ways to what we ended up with the sequel. It was kind of neat. This one was co-written by Stallone and James Cameron, of all people. I didn't realize that Cameron had anything to do with this. That one is, it's almost a buddy picture for a little bit, which is kind of strange because Rambo, of course, is the way that he's presented is just really strange. You know, it's just him and his knife. And that's basically what he is going to take over with him to Vietnam. He's going back to Vietnam. They think that there are some POWs over there, so he wants to go back. And basically his assignment is to take some pictures, and that's it. Do not rescue anyone. So take pictures, come back, report. And the overarching plan by the guy who's sending him, who's this bureaucrat, and in the movies played by Charles Napier, our old friend from Miami Blues, the idea is that he's supposed to find an empty camp, and that's going to put an end to this whole debate about POWs. But when he gets there, he finds a full camp. But it's funny that he gets paired up with this guy, and this other dude is, for as stripped down as Rambo is, this other guy comes with all of this gear, all of this stuff, where he has all this equipment, and he is not a very good soldier at all. And Rambo is just constantly on this guy, like, you know, repeat back the plan. What are we going to do? You know, show me how to use this equipment in case we get separated and all this kind of stuff, in case one of us dies and all this. And that guy is a real albatross around Rambo's neck when they get there. And he just, you know, is completely, he's always screwing up. And they find that there is a POW. They rescue this guy. Well, actually, they find a whole group of POWs, but there's one guy in a tiger trap, and they say, and Rambo says, he's not going to make it, so I need to rescue him. You know, he's going to be dead by the time we get back. I have to rescue this guy. So they rescue him. They take off from there, and they're joined by this Vietnamese woman who's kind of their guide. Take them back. They're supposed to be picked up by a helicopter. The bureaucrat tells the helicopter to turn back, because they're not supposed to have any kind of POWs with them. They turn back. We end up finding out that, you know, what that secret plan was and all this kind of stuff. And the other character, the not so good soldier, he gets hurt, and they all end up back in, well, not the Vietnamese woman, but they end up back in the POW camp. And then the Soviets show up. By having the Soviets show up, we really introduce more of the modern, at that time, 1985, foreign policy kind of stuff, because we were having problems with the, quote, evil empire, unquote. But that other guy was supposed to originally be played by John Travolta, which I think would have been like some of the worst chemistry ever between Travolta and Stallone. So it's just like, wow, I'm kind of glad that they killed that. And really, by removing that character, you don't miss him at all, because he is, you know, everything happens exactly the way that I just said in the final product in Rambo First Blood Part 2, but without that douchey guy being there. And it really becomes more of Rambo being a loner again and relying a little bit on the Vietnamese lady until yeah, she doesn't make it. So spoilers, and just in case you haven't seen the film, but that she dies relatively early in the proceedings.
Like, oh my God, Rambo, what we gonna do? Like, maybe we could find a massage parlor around here.
Oh, you had to go there.
I'm sorry.
No,
we'll
that's
never
great.
Get John Travolta now.
No.
How am I gonna do? How are we gonna do Battlefield Earth? I mean, come on.
Or Blowout. Yeah,
we're in trouble. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Kind of really gives Blowout a little bit different of a connotation now.
Oh. Well,
sorry.
heading back into the woods with Rambo on First Blood and all the various things that have come out of this obviously this book 40 years on, 1972, in the first film from 1982. What do you think is sort of the thing we can carry forward? What's sort of the thing for you, Mike, when you think about this character and you think about everything that's come out of First Blood?
Well, I think that this character, like I said before, his importance can't be overestimated. I mean, you know, Morell says it, and I completely agree with him as far as how many characters have crossed over from just being a figure in literature or in movies to actually becoming basically an icon of popular culture. And Rambo is one of those. I mean, I don't think that just because the 80s are over that he doesn't carry that weight. I mean, you said before that the way that action films are done kind of really came out of the way that these Rambo movies were. And, you know, he's still around and kicking. I mean, we just had a fourth Rambo film just a few years ago, which kind of, you know, it was, again, a very different tone. Each one of these movies carries a lot of different tone to it, and really kind of, you know, the Rambo, why I said that the 80s were important was just because the first three were really products of the 80s and really reflecting what was going on in the zeitgeist. And then with the new Rambo, John Rambo, I think was Rambo Part 4. So again, we have this kind of title shift. Not only do we have the Rambo name in there, but then we get his first name, and there's no mention of First Blood in that. So it's not First Blood Part 4. again, just kind of, you know, he's trying to speak to what's going on today. And it's just kind of strange the way that this character continues going on, and just there's still some life in the old boy left.
And that's the thing that I think will be interesting, especially for us, obviously, as the sons of Vietnam veterans, and then as we get older, and as the Vietnam veterans get older, and then they're no longer with us. It'll be interesting to see, I think, and obviously I might not be here, 50 years out, 100 years out, if this character has the staying power to continue to be a metaphor in some way, or to be used in that way, or be remembered in that way. Because that's the thing when we talked to David Morrell, where he said, you know, Rambo is one of those characters, like Sherlock Holmes, like Harry Potter, that has crossed over. And when you say that name to someone, people know, they get an image, they know what that means. So it'll be interesting to see how this character can live on beyond Vietnam in a way. And all of the things that came after it, that it maybe could have the staying power 50, 100 years on to still be an impactful name and still be a reference that people would understand.
Yeah, all just a bastardization of a French poet and new brand apples.
Who knew? Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
All right, so let's take a break here. We're going to play a preview from next week's show.
Here in this primitive river bottom wilderness in southern Arkansas, along with deer, duck, crane, and beaver, lurks a creature that walks upright. Whether it is a man, a monster, or a myth, no one really knows. What we do know is the people around Falk, Arkansas, say they have seen such a creature nearly 250 times since 1954. And that this creature, whatever it is, emits one of the most terrifying sounds ever recorded. Creek, rated G.
That was a preview for next week's show, The Legend of Boggy Creek. Be sure to come back and hear us joined by Dave Coleman, author of the Bigfoot filmography, as we talk about this key film in the Ciné du Sasquatch. So yeah, I think, maybe Rambo, had he been in the Boggy Creek area, you know, could have helped us out a little bit.
Sasquatch was a pussy. All right, so check out the website projection-booth.com. We'll have links to all the folks, if you've heard in our discussion, the movies reviewed and discussed. We'll have links to David Morrell's website. We'll have links to Zachary Oberzan's website, where you can get Flooding with Love for the Kid. Also Garth Jennings and what he's doing with Hammer and Tongs over in the UK. And stop by, leave us some feedback, tell us what you like, what you hate, if you've been harassed by the cops because of your love for film, it's happened, or if you're just a hippie. It's okay. It doesn't matter to us. We're like mom, and we accept and love you the way you are. So there you go. Positive affirmation so that you don't go crazy and decide to become the next Rambo up in here in the land of the podcast in the projection booth.
Don't push it.
We got Daisy Torn. Brainwash your boy. Singing it back, we go on. We never should have thought it at all. A kind of fact never to call our own. Who rewrites it through a machine gun? Don't think about it, kill it. That's what you teach your child.
Rambozo, Rambozo, Rambozo the clown. Rambozo, Rambozo, Rambozo the clown. Two traffic steers. Sure looks like fun.
Watch me pull a massacre out of my pants.
Again?
All I wanted was something to eat. But the man kept pushing, sir.
Well, you did some pushing of your own, John.
They drew first blood, not me.